cliffcentral.com. Hello and welcome to another In Conference with Michael Jackson right here on cliffcentral.com. This is the show where you get to meet the people that I'm lucky enough to meet on my world of conference travels. They're generally authors, famous lecturers, entrepreneurs, wow, you name it, we bring them to you. And I'm particularly delighted that my guest for this particular podcast ticks a number of boxes for me in terms of being a guest on the show as a regular guest would. But he's also somebody that I met recently when he launched one of his new books, because I've got a little bit of a passion into history, particularly in South Africa, and I specialize in the Mpumalanga region. But I'm going to introduce you to a man who has been a journalist, he's an author, he's extremely well known. Hell, his ancestors even have a town named after them in South Africa. It's David Hilton Barber, who's a fourth generation South African of 1820 settler stock. Well known journalist, well known author. David, what a pleasure to track you down from a secret location somewhere in your retirement. I'm delighted to have you with us on the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
I looked at you. I attended your book launch, read your book recently, and we'll talk about the books that you've written. But first and foremost, I wanted to think about the journalistic side of things, because your family does go way back in South Africa. And in fact, your maternal great-grandfather, Frederick St. Ledger, was the founder and editor of the Cape Times. So you've almost got journalism in your genes, really, haven't you?
Well, yes. I did study, I attended a cadet course, as you did in those days. After my university degree, I took English and history at Rhodes, and then joined the Argus group, as it then was, in Rhodesia, and I took a cadet course and was posted to a country newspaper way up in Indola as a junior reporter. But yes, training as a journalist and then spending a good deal of my career in the public relations and advertising field.
Yes.
Writing, of course, has always been my passion. I now write nonfiction historical books on people, places, and events. I have my own publishing imprint, which is Footprints Press, which is a name I've adopted because my first couple of books were titled Footprints in the Lowveld, and another area, Footprints in Zanine. And a number of books that I've published are available through my website. But I also do editing. I've become a member of the Professional Editors Guild and edit books by third-party authors, which is another string to my bow, I guess. And these books can be published through my imprint or Footprints.
I love that. Now, let's go back and look at each of those in the brief time that we've got together today. The journalism thing in its heyday, in the good old days of journalism, let's call it that, journalism has come a long, long way, not necessarily for the better in modern times. You know, do you think the standard of South African journalism, in your personal opinion, is anywhere near as good as it perhaps ought to be by your own standards in today's era?
I suppose the answer must be no, but things have changed, and the newspaper no longer fulfills the role that it did in our day. A newspaper was relied on to bring you up-to-date contemporary news and information, whereas today there's a variety of other media that you can access, which is quicker and it's easier to assess. So it has changed. Also, newspapers have had to cut down a lot because of the economics of the matter. Mm. And whereas in the past you could employ senior journalists who had their own beat, so to speak. Now you have young men and women that have to cover a wide variety of subjects that they're no longer able to get really to grips with them. And it's a day-to-day sort of battle to get hold of the news and get it back to the office.
Because very few members of the public realize that newspapers relied on classical advertising in order to build the newsrooms that they had, didn't they?
Yes, and that's drying up, or it's reduced.
And what do you think of
the costs of production are going up?
Absolutely. Now, what do you think of, you know, the president of the US, the carrot-topped Donald Trump, talking about fake news on a continuous basis?
Yeah, I'm not going to be drawn into that. But yeah, he's a bit of a maverick, but he has created quite a stir.
A bit of a newspaper man's dream in the old-fashioned sense of it. But let's focus on the fake news side. I mean, you know, people tend to be gullible, let's face it. Most people, my friends on Facebook, seem to battle to understand the difference between real, genuine information and what's become known colloquially as fake news. Why is that, David?
Why is it? I suppose sensationalism takes over. It's quick to grab one's attention. This is the age of consumerism, I suppose. Easy to get, easy to process, maybe hopefully easy to forget. But it is a trend that we're going through, and maybe it will change. The assumption or the consumption of information has changed completely, and we're in a different field now.
I mean, you moved from newspapers into PR. Let's move into that world for a second. How do you feel about PR people today? Do you think they've got a tough job?
Yes, they have. But it is important. The old philosophy of public relations was to communicate the news or the information from the business world. Business people are often reluctant to enter into the communication area because it's not really their scene. Whereas the opponents of business are quick to grab attention, and one needs to have a balancing situation where the information can be presented fairly and accurately from the other side.
It's a tough assignment nonetheless, though, in this day and age. Are you glad that you've retired so effectively from that PR world, other than being your own PR?
Yes, I ran my own company for some years. It was very stimulating, and I met a lot of remarkable people, and was involved in a number of interesting events. I don't for a moment regret the choice that I made. But yes, it was a relief when I retired, and I could put my attention wholly into writing, which is what I'm doing now. And in retirement, this is the time when you can use your time in the way that you want to, and spend hours of the day doing things that you like rather than what you have to do.
And as you say, non-fiction history is your particular passion. I share that passion with you empathetically. I mean, as you know, but our audience won't, is that Barberton, a town named after your ancestors, the gold rush of 1884 into Barberton, literally was discovered, the gold was discovered in that region by two of your ancestors, the Barber brothers, and a chap called Henry Rymer. The town of Barberton is there. I mean, it's just, you know, you've written books about the Lowveld. You've written books about Zanine. You've written books about, oh, gosh, growing up in the people in the Karoo. You know, non-fiction history, is that your bag now? Is that what you most love? Because it excites me.
I'd like to quote Margaret Atwood, the Canadian novelist. She's a novelist, not a historian, but she writes, "The past no longer belongs only to those who lived in it. The past belongs to those who claim it and are willing to explore it and infuse it with meaning for those alive today." Now, that's what I like. It sort of puts it all in a nutshell. But getting back to Barberton, the Barber brothers didn't actually discover the gold. They were hunters. They were farmers in the Eastern Cape. And they would leave their farms and their wives and go on a trek for months at a time on hunting expeditions way up or way down into the Lowveld. And it was a coincidence that their area that they always camped at, Barber's Spun, was the location of this gold rush. And when the mining commissioner from Pretoria came down to register the claims, he stayed with the Barbers at Barber's Spun. And it was an easy move from there to call the place Barberton. But the Barber brothers, they didn't stay as gold miners. They were essentially farmers and explorers, and they had a number of escapades thereafter.
Indeed, they did, travelling north and travelling across. I'm not sure if I'd been them that I would have left those very rich goldfields. Would you have left the goldfields? Would you have stayed? I mean, gold is obviously something that intrigues you. You've written about Heinertsberg. There's gold up there. You've written about the Tati concession. Some phenomenal gold stories that built this country. Do you regret not being in those times?
I do. The Tati concession is a very interesting one. I went to school at Plumtree in Rhodesia, which was the last or the first entry point from Botswana. It's on the railway line, and the next town is Francistown, and that is the scene of the Tati concession. Mm. As schoolboys, we used to get on the train and go down to Francistown and play cricket. It was only a stone's throw away, really. But Francistown, the Tati concession, was granted by Loban Gula to an English baronet, Sir John Swinburne. It was the first gold rush in southern Africa, and it was intriguing, and it was really a wonderful part of history. Well before Botswana became a Bechuanaland or protectorate, and Kruger was still looking to expand westwards, and Rhodes was dreaming of his Cape to Cairo railway, all of these things were coming together at that historic time when this gold rush occurred. So, it's a fascinating part of history.
I think you've got gold in your blood, literally, as well as figuratively, haven't you?
Yeah.
It's a remarkable thing. I mean, the books, you enjoy writing them, but, you know, I went to your book launch of your last book, funnily enough, in Barberton, and, I mean, people were kind of intrigued. Everybody to want to rush up and meet you, and how do they find you? Because we've got about 3 minutes left before we've got to say farewell for this episode. But, I mean, where do people go and find out more about the man from the news that became a PR consultant that became a best-selling author?
Yeah, I think Google my name, David Hilton Barber, and you get access to my website, which lists the 9 books I've published, and they are available mostly by contacting me. Today, one doesn't easily get into the book chains, the exclusives, and so on, as a not a well-known author or one who hasn't got a wide readership. I'm a niche writer, really. And like you say, in Barberton, the people of the area were interested. People interested in history will always find the information that they need. And I market my books myself quite a lot of the time, which is an added interest because it gets you involved with your public and your readership. Attending book fairs and giving talks at Friends of the Library, interested parties, book clubs. That's what I like to do.
I love it. And that's from Footprints Press as well, David's own label in terms of Mr. Hilton Barber's books. Google this man. He is absolutely fascinating. David, we could talk for hours. Sadly, Gareth Cliff only gives me 15 minutes, which is not fair, really, because, you know, having met you, having interviewed you now, having had you as a guest on the show, I mean, it's just an absolute joy. Your family is legendary, not only from great settler stock, but proud South Africans. I know that people in your family are also massively involved in the media to this day. I hope people go and look you up now. David Hilton Barber on Google. Buy at least one of those 9 books. Sit back and have a bloody good historical read and change your perspective about things. David, I have to sadly say farewell, but honestly, sir, a real privilege and pleasure to have you on the program with us today.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
And that's In Conference with Michael Jackson right here on your favorite podcast platform in his best James Earl Jones voice. This is CliffCentral.com. Thank you for being with us. CliffCentral.com.